Welcome to the Daily Elevator. Today I have a very special guest with me, Danielle Radin, who is a journalist, an Emmy Award-winning journalist with CBS, and the author of 6 books. Thank you, Danielle, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to talk about your last book. I believe the title was...
Make Millions Using ChatGPT.
Yeah, everyone's trying to figure out what is this thing and how do I use it for my benefit. So can you tell us what the heck this thing is and why it's so critical and important for us and for the future?
I am obsessed with ChatGPT. I use it every day, and it is just this incredible piece of artificial intelligence that lets you do all the things that you need to do in the day a lot quicker. If you need to Google something, if you need to write something, if you need to look up something, it just does that a lot quicker. And I'm pretty sure it's going to take over Google one day. That's what people are saying, because it's just so fast. It's so efficient. You can use it in virtually any field that you're in, real estate, finance, accounting, whatever it is. It can help every single person. ChatGPT 4 can code in almost any language. We're not even going to need to have like full-blown coding academies anymore, or boot camps, because ChatGPT will be able to do it for you. And it's just such a time saver, and it's super exciting. I use it all the time.
When it comes to writing, now you're an Emmy Award-winning journalist, so how is it at its capability of writing right now? I mean, how much trust can you put in it, and how far do you use it?
Well, you can't blindly trust it yet. It'll probably get there at some point. You have to have some human intervention in it, but it's just super exciting. Like when you're a general assignment reporter, like I am, every day you have to be an expert on a different topic. And sometimes you don't really know like what's going on in that field. For example, if you have to interview like a cancer researcher, you don't know everything about cancer research, right? Well, if I want to get more background now, I can go into ChatGPT. I can tell it, summarize 10 articles on oncology in a easy to use bit that I can use for my report. And it will just on the spot tell you everything that you need to know. Now I have the background to go in and interview this expert oncologist to put them on TV or on digital or whatever it might be. But that's just like one example. And then a lot of times, you know, with writing, you're getting a press release from like the office of Governor Gavin Newsom, for example, right? And you could look at the press release, put it into ChatGPT, tell me all the big parts of this press release that I shouldn't miss. And it'll give you that, you know, and it makes it so much quicker. You're still writing the article, because they also have websites where it lets you know if AI wrote the article, and you don't want to go on to like a major news website a chatbot wrote it. So you still have to write it. But it just helps with all that kind of like background to get into writing the article and publishing the article. It's super cool.
That's really incredible. Now we're using AI to figure out if AI wrote something. How paradoxical is that? That's pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah, it always, like when you have the CAPTCHA to get into websites, I always think about how that's a robot asking you if you're a robot. So meta, but yeah, I mean, that's just where it's gotten, because the way that ChatGPT writes is getting better and better. You can tell from month to month that the style is improving. And you can even prompt it to say, to learn your writing style. And you could give it a bunch of articles that you've written and say, write this in this writing style so that it sounds like you. And it's just incredible how quickly it learns.
How much longer do you give the regular search engine, Google, Bing, DuckDuckGo, all those, to be relevant in this kind of world? Is ChatGPT more going to be a kind of deeper learning curve for a lot of people who are never going to use it and stick with the old style Google search? Or is this something that we're seeing, like maybe a certain age group is really starting to adopt this compared to, like, you know, I guess the boomers?
Oh, that's a good question. I give Google like 5 years at this point. I think that maybe the older generation will continue to use it in the way that like some of our parents still have Hotmail accounts and AOL accounts.
Yeah.
When everyone else kind of switched to a Gmail account. But yeah, I, you know, you can get a ChatGPT app on your phone. I just learned this like yesterday, and I've just been using it instead of Google, trying to get myself used to going to that for my first source.
We've used Google and search engines for so long that it's ubiquitous and it's just normal. Like, no one thinks anything of it. And now with ChatGPT, it's just the next iteration of whatever this is going to be. I mean, I personally believe that, obviously, like Elon says, at one point we're going to have to integrate with AI in our brains to stay relevant in a world where it runs everything for us. But I think some people see it as having an unfair advantage, but then that's exactly what Google is. You know, like, how far do you take it back to say, well, technically anything is an unfair advantage. Books with text are unfair advantage. Videos are unfair advantage. You can go up and up. So I think a lot about how we save information. And not to go on a little diatribe, but I was thinking deeply about this the other day, how much better I can learn now than I could in the past, because in the beginning, you had just spoken language. That's how you transferred information to people, right? There was no written language. And then you had written language. You can save the information for longer. And now we have video. So if I have a problem anywhere in the world at any time, now we're transversing information through time. I can watch a video that someone did on a specific thing and not have to spend time doing that. So as humanity, we can iterate and get to the solution that much faster because we have all this content. And now it's going to ChatGPT where it just tells us. We don't have to search for it, which is, I mean, it's just incredible. I don't know if people grasp the gravity of what's happening. It's just, it's incredible. And I just wanted to say that.
I think about that all the time. I think about, like, when I was a kid in the 90s, I had so many questions that would go through my head, like as I was walking or riding my scooter or whatever. And I would just have to forget the question, because I didn't have access to like an encyclopedia, I didn't have a cell phone, I didn't have any way to look it up, so I just forget it. And like now it's like you can literally, there's so much information that's free and readily available to you. You can literally be anything you want to be. You can study yourself and be literally anything you want to be. There's more ways than ever to make money just with all the apps and all the technology, and that's just improving more and more with ChatGPT. There's going to be whole new fields of people like prompt engineers and all these different things that just were never even an option like a year ago. And it's crazy. It's moving so fast. We're in the renaissance of technology and it's super exciting.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. When I was a kid, I would question everything. How is this bridge made? Why is this? And I was wondering. And that's a cognitive complex function an ability. And I've read many articles how we're losing that just by, in a simple fact of using GPS, right? Our spatial awareness is degrading, and even the part of the brain is shrinking because obviously we don't lose it, you know, use it, we lose it. So I'm wondering how much of this ability to find information right away is that taking away from our ability to wonder and to think and to actually critically think rather than like just always have the answer. I'm wondering, where is that equilibrium at?
That's an interesting question. I don't know if where the equilibrium is. I think it does have the potential on the negative side to like take away creativity in us as humans. Like, for example, I was just writing a screenplay and I couldn't figure out what I wanted the last scene to be. And I kept thinking, and normally I would write like, you know, 10 or 20 different scenes and then kind of ask my friends which one was best. I was like, I'll just plug the script into ChatGPT. And I said, come up with an ending for this script. And it came up with one. And I said, do another. And I just kept going. And then I could take all those different suggestions and kind of like merge them into what I wanted. But like, is that humans like not using their creativity anymore? Or is it them using it in a different way that's kind of like catering to the times and the technology?
I guess that philosophically it comes down to whether you believe humans should spend their time on tasks that can be done by other things to leave us open for whatever higher thoughts that can potentially happen. So is the purpose of life to be as efficient as possible and have something else do all the work for us so we can be these higher beings that just, I don't know, float in the air and do whatever, I don't know, maybe, you know, sing harmonies? Or is it to really try to figure out what the solution is to something, right? Like, how much power are we going to give AI to do what we should be doing? And then At that point, what's going to happen to us? Like, what is going to be our position when we just give all the power away to something like AI?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely going to shift from what it is now. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't pretend to make any predictions anymore because things are just moving so quickly.
That's a smart thing, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like I could have predicted in the past like what 2008 to 2018 would look like. But in the next 10 years from now, 2033, I have no idea what the world's going to look like. I don't know what kind of cars we're going to be driving, what kind of computers we're going to be using, who's going to be in office. Like, everything's just changing so quickly. I don't know.
If you can estimate, like, how much is it helping you as on a percentage? Is it saving you like 10% of time of what you used to do, or...
I think that it is saving a lot of the legwork, the time that it takes. If you've ever been like, I want to accomplish this, this, and this project, but I just don't have the time. Now you do. What if you did have all that time? Like, and that helps so much. I think I'm at least, you know, 40 to 50% more efficient
that's
in my
huge.
Job.
Boy, yeah. That's massive.
Yeah.
Companies succeed or die off like marginal increases in like productivity.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just like writing this new book, I used ChatGPT to help me write it. Now, I still had to do a lot of editing. It was actually a lot more work than I thought it was going to be because the writing style, like, it's just very repetitive and you're going through and editing a lot. But it was still quicker than the other books. It cut the time in half, you know? It still took months, but it cut the time in half. And that's just like in phase three, GPT-3.
Yeah.
Like, by the time it gets to GPT-54, who knows?
We're only at 3 right now,
yeah.
And that's incredible.
Yeah.
So that being said, you're saving 40 to 50% of the time, which is, I mean, absolutely astronomical. Like, that's on a level I've never seen in the Industrial Revolution, maybe, you know? Maybe that's the only time that you really, especially in the beginning, where you had that kind of efficiency. But here's my question. All these people are saving all this time. And time is the only commodity that you cannot create, destroy, or buy. You can waste it. But what are we going to do with all this extra time? Like, what are we going to spend it on? Is it going to be just low intelligence things like Netflix and relaxing? Or, you know what I mean? Like, that's a really important question. And I know everyone's different, but that's just something I think about.
Yeah, I mean, literally whatever you want to spend it on, like, I know I'm thinking about getting a new hobby. I want to get into martial arts, you know, because I have time.
Well, your last name's Raiden, so it's perfect.
That's true. Yeah, I could play Mortal Kombat with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, it is a level of responsibility that you have to have. If you have more time, I would hope that you're using it for good, not using it for evil. Or, you know, if you want to have more relaxation time, I don't think that that's ever a bad thing. I think we work way too much in this country. They're talking about getting into more of like a 4-day work week. Mm-hmm. And I think we need more vacation time, like what Europe does, more downtime. Like, if that's good for you and your mental health, I think that's good for society as a whole, even to just have more downtime for yourself, that you're not doing all that legwork.
You know, I used to always think about how humans aren't meant to do just backbreaking hard work with their hands, right? Like, you should spend it with your family, with your community, making your world better. And up until recently, it's been incrementally getting this way, but now I'm having to change my way of thinking to like, this can actually be a possibility. So now everything that I thought should happen is happening. So am I right in the way I'm thinking, right? And then if that's the case, then what's next? Like, when we don't have to educate our children because, you know, AI could do the bulk of the work and do, you know, like a specific curriculum with each and every student depending on his or her progression and needs. When AI is literally writing lawsuits, which it's now doing, you know, it's writing lawsuits, it's doing accounting, it's finding errors and omissions, it's doing everything. What's our position? What are we going to do? You know, I don't know. And no one really knows, but it's interesting to think about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing too. Sometimes when I'm using it and it's writing something for me, I'm like, am I making smarter the thing that's going to replace me? Like, am I looking at my replacement as a journalist, as a writer in a few years from now, and I'm just kind of teaching it how to get more efficient. But you just got to pivot. You got to carve out whatever niche you carve out in the future. And again, there's so many new opportunities for that, that it's like sky's the limit on, if you want to be something, you can do it. You know, as long as you have the energy and the motivation and the confidence in yourself.
You know, I know someone who's really happy about your efficiency is probably your news editor. Getting him stuff. He's like, here's their deadline. He's like, oh, it's done. Oh, excuse me?
Yeah, I mean, you can crank out so much more news, which is important. You can get to it first before the other news stations. And you can just get more information out to the public, which is the overarching theme of being a journalist, is getting important information out to the public so that they can have it and use it in their life. So it's just a quicker and easier way to do that.
To kind of pivot, local news is basically dead now. There's no money in it compared to the national news. It's not as much clicked eyeballs, but it matters so much more than national news, which you never really see with your own eyes, right? Like, sure, a protest in like Alabama, it has repercussions, but not for your local news. And this is where the laws really affect you. So what do you feel would kind of revitalize local journalism other than just making a profit, which I know that's kind of the reason why it died off?
Yeah, I mean, people aren't in journalism to make a bunch of money. Like, they're in it because they love it. They're in it because it's important. Journalism's not going anywhere. And it is crucial. If there's a wildfire in your community, you need to know about it so that you can evacuate safely. There was just a tornado. Did you see that?
That was incredible.
What was up with that?
My grandma sent me, I said, Grandma, it's never going to happen. Sure enough, it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it happened, and people need to know about it. There were actually two of them. There was one in Ventura County, too. Wow. And so I think that that would be good to have a fund for journalism, as long as it's not motivated by some kind of politics or some kind of company that wants to push their agenda. It needs to be unbiased. And especially on a local level, you know, a lot of people say to me, oh, you're fake news. We can't trust you. I tell them, I don't get a pay raise for swaying your opinion.
Yeah.
I'm just here to tell you what's going on right here, right now in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a CNN, a Fox, a political commentator. Like, they do get money to sway your
opinion. Of course, that's what they get hired for, is how good can you make a point for the side.
Right. But with local news, ABC, NBC, CBS, for the most part, these are just professionals wanting to give you unbiased information. And I forgot what I was talking about. I got swayed off topic. I think that's an interesting concept to have a fund. There was like a hyper-local website at one point called Patch, and it was owned by AOL. But it was like, if you wanted news about East Hollywood specifically, it was a hyper-local fixation on a particular community, and they had like two or three writers. And it was really interesting because it was kind of cutting to the core of issues that you might not get in a more broad local news outlet. Like with CBS, we cover LA County, Orange County, Ventura, San Bernardino, Riverside. That's a lot to get to in one newscast.
That's a lot of area.
You're only seeing like the top most important. And what about the like hyper local stuff that really impacts each community? So that was like a super interesting concept, but it couldn't make any money.
That's sad.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of a way that you can even utilize it to help local news. So for instance, just off the top of my head, I don't know if you heard of the Citizen app.
Oh yeah.
If anyone hasn't heard of it, it tells you all the crime happening in the city. It tells you the location. People can comment on it and they can live stream as it happens. So you get it. I'm even thinking there's a way where you can integrate into their API, a ChatGPT, and say, hey, pull every story that comes out of this. And then calculate it and tell us if crime is going up or down and what are the hot spots in the areas, essentially what the police do, but without using all that manpower, having AI really plug in where the hot spots are and say, listen, city council, here's where all the crime is happening at, and it's open source. We don't have to rely on you. So do something about this area.
Yeah.
You know, and these are the crimes that are happening, and list the crimes in you know, in sequential order, depending on, you know, how many are happening.
That's really interesting. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah, because that would tell you exactly, like, listen, if there's an abundance of knife attacks in the last 3 months, why? What happened? Like, what are these, you know, what's going on?
Yeah, and people should know that so they can avoid, like, walking there at night or whatever. If there's a spike in knife attacks on a certain street, I don't want to be on that street. Exactly. You don't want to be on that street.
Yeah, I mean, around here in Hollywood, it's every single night. Two nights ago, a woman was abducted 400 feet from me, and then 300 feet from me, there was a knife attack. Within 2 hours of each other, you know, and that was on a weekend, but still, like, that's not normal,
yeah.
You know, but we normalize it because it happens every single day.
Yeah.
And I checked the comments on Citizen. Typically, people were outraged, like, are you kidding me? Zero comments on a woman being abducted by a van.
Wow.
And I think it's maybe because people are just, oh, that's just normal, so whatever.
Yeah.
And that's when I think it gets to a bad point where people normalize a crime and, oh, well, it is what it is, when that shouldn't be standard.
Right. Yeah. No, that's horrific. And I think that people do get kind of news overload where they can only care about so many things. And then it just keeps happening and keeps happening. And it's like, okay, am I going to risk my mental health and just constantly be in a state of depression? Or am I going to disengage, not look at the news, not, you know, put my energy towards something more positive? Because people get fatigued. They get news fatigue.
Yeah.
You know, even the people that work in news get fatigued. It's like, oh my gosh, what is going on with this crime? It just keeps getting worse and worse, you know?
When it comes to national news, that's what people are more, typically are more focused on, right? Because it's the big headlines, Trump this and, you know, Trump that or whatever. But in reality, you're never going to meet any of the people that you see on the news. You're never going to meet the people, the participants that are in the news. So when it comes to national big politics, it's a soap opera. And every day there's a new episode. And it's meant to glue you to the screen and keep you, but that's not real life. You're never going to meet any of those people. They never have a direct impact on your life at all. What's real is what you experienced in your life. And that's one thing that I think the differentiation between liberal and conservative people. But that's one thing that where community comes into play. It's really, really important because here in the big city, in the concrete jungle, we don't meet our neighbors. We don't really know what's happening. We watch news and say, that's real. But in smaller communities, it's like, yeah, okay, that's the national news, but this is what's going on when I leave the house. Here's who I'm talking to. Here's the updates of the community. I think that's really important. It's something that we've lost living in massive cities is that loss of communication, of actual real communication between people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hear a lot of people say all the time, oh, I'm not going to vote in the presidential election because my vote doesn't matter. It's not going to change anything. It matters at a local level. Like, there was a recent election in Culver City, and the person won by a difference of less than 10 votes.
Wow.
That means that less than 10 people made a huge impact on the leadership in a huge city, Culver City. You know, it matters on a local level. You do have the ability with your vote to change things. And I think people need to realize that if you feel like you can't make a difference nationally, you can make a difference locally. Absolutely.
I think the statement that people make, I'm not going to vote for, you know, because I can't influence the presidential election. Well, you're thinking about one election when in reality, like, there's tons of judges and city councils and school boards that really matter. And I think, again, that goes back to the fact that everyone's so focused on national politics. That's like, you know, a lot of people don't even vote on most of the people in their local because they don't know who they are. They're like, oh, I don't know, a judge, what's it going to affect me? When it's like, idiot, that's who affects you, not Trump or Biden in an office. This is real.
Yeah, read the local voting pamphlet. Like, look at the background of the person. Go on their website. Know who you're voting for, because it is going to impact you in your day-to-day life in ways that you might not realize. You know, if you even if you get, like, pulled over while you're driving, it's going to impact you who the sheriff is and who the police chief is and all that. So yeah, it's important.
You know, nobody wants to talk to the cops because they say, oh, it's the cops. But unless you know what they go through on a day-to-day basis, you really don't understand them. My cousin, he's a CHP officer. He's a K-9 CHP officer. And he was in the Marines in Afghanistan. He was a bomb sniffing K-9 operator over there. But I've learned so much just talking to him, what they go through on a day-to-day basis. Even the simple fact is, like, you know, typically you want to be strong, right? As a cop, you want to be strong. But here's the thing, is you got to realize that you're sitting in your patrol car for, let's say, 8 hours, right? Driving around. And at a second's notice, you have to go from 0 to 100 and chase down someone. He goes, do you know how physically like hard that is on the body? It's just to be sitting down and all of a sudden your adrenaline spikes the roof, your cortisol level goes, your heart rate's pumping, and you have to go run after someone and tackle them when you don't even know. He goes, that's really bad for your health. So what he started doing, and he's talking, and he's like, work on cardio more than strength, because you really don't need to strong arm people that often. So, and then what are the health implications for that and all the mental health that cops go through when every day you don't know if you're going to get shot or killed and with your family? That's an incredibly stressful job. And, you know, it kind of goes back to the whole community thing. If you don't know who your police officers that are patrolling, your local people, you know, patrol officers and what they go through, you don't talk to them, you're never going to know what they go through. You know, screw the cops, defund the police, like idiot. You don't even know what that means and what it means that will happen. So a lot just goes back to knowing your area. It's like critical.
Yeah. I mean, I've reported all over California. And when I got my start, I was reporting in a lot smaller communities in Northern California. And we listened to the police scanners to get news tips. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would get there like before the firefighters or before the cop.
Oh, sorry, keep going. I'm just going to check.
Oh.
Hey, this camera's on. It's
on. Turn it off. Oh, sure. Yeah, sometimes I would get there before the firefighters or before the cops even, and you would see like a person watching their house burn down. Or one time I was in this police shootout in Humboldt County.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm like ducking behind cars, like with my cameraman. And,
like, wow, that's incredible.
We're in this like, I think it was a mobile home park, and the guy started shooting, and we're like, oh my God. But yeah, it's like really, really crazy the things that they see.
Absolutely.
The things that you don't hear about. When they get onto the scene, it is like the Wild West.
I don't know if you've done this before, but it's incredible. It's just mind-blowing. Now, everyone is scared because cameras are everywhere, right? Like, when you look at reporting from the 90s and you go, the local reporters are in the house parties where things are happening and people are showing them their guns, like, yo, look at my thing, like, here's the guns, and they're doing drugs in front of the cameras, and those are big cameras, you know. You go to the LA riots and people are shooting guns in front of the reporter, and they're reporting during it, and I'm like, how is this doesn't seem like real life. And then it hit me, as back then you didn't equate to a camera recording you with culpability or you know, or being convicted of a crime. So to them that didn't matter. But because there's cameras on every phone now, anytime there's a camera, people act differently. They're not themselves.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like if you watch, just spend some time going down a YouTube hole of like 90s reporting, especially during the riots. The stuff they would do is like, there's gunshots going off behind them, and they're like, and coming to you from, you know, from CBS, people were shooting each other. I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's true. And you know, it's kind of the same concept as people that ruin their careers over tweets from like 2008 because they didn't think that anybody would see that.
Yeah.
And that tying it back to ChatGPT, that makes me wonder, when you type questions into ChatGPT, it saves everything. And at what point is it going to be like people committing cyber crimes on ChatGPT and getting busted because law enforcement is now savvy to that and has a database.
And Google owns it.
And what are they doing with that information? What are they doing with all your searches? And is that going to become public at some point? Like the tweets, the old tweets and all that. So it's a big privacy issue, definitely.
You know, you're exactly right. And I'll tell you this. I worked in politics for like 4 years when I was younger, when I was in college. And I know this, that this is in the Facebook days. This is pre-Instagram. But if anyone was coming up at the ranks of like, you know, the young Democrats or the young Republicans, there were people who would screenshot anything that you posted on Facebook to save it for later in case you ran against, you know, for office. This was the early version of what's happening now. And we were doing that, you know, back in the day. So I can only imagine how much more information they have on anyone now who's going to be running. You know, it's, God, you know, Rob Lowe, he was on Joe Rogan one time, maybe a year or two ago. And he goes, I don't know why anyone would want to be a celebrity now. Like, I don't know. He goes, you can't do anything. Everyone wants to see you crash and burn. Everything you say is ridiculed. All your old stuff is, you know, comes back to bite you. He's like, it doesn't make sense now.
Yeah, it's true. It's like, you just have to assume that you have zero privacy on every website you've ever used, on every phone you've ever had. You know, it all goes to the cloud, and who knows where that goes. And now there's this whole TikTok thing happening on Capitol Hill just today. The CEO of TikTok is at talking to Congress, and Congress is grilling him.
Yeah.
You know, how is this private? Where is this data going? How are you going to ensure that this isn't used for sinister reasons? Mm-hmm. And he wasn't answering any questions. He kept saying, I have to get back to you. I have to get back to you.
Yeah.
That's a complicated question. And it just really makes you question, where is this data going? What is going
to
be
the CCP?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. But what's going to be the implications of all the new data that we're collecting through these artificial intelligence systems? Where is that going to go? Is that going to be able to like come back and haunt you later on in your career in one way or another? Like,
I think maybe that's part of the reason why we see a rise in this insane like alt-right rhetoric that's coming out, because what's the opposite of being super careful about everything you say? It's the opposite. Just say whatever the hell you want to say, and there's so much crazy stuff. That's just you. Maybe that's why we're seeing the rise of that kind of rhetoric, because that's the only way that you can get around of all this stuff. Like, oh, you said this back in 08. Yeah, who cares? That's what I believe, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. You have to be yourself unapologetically and authentically all the time. Because if you say something hateful and you're going to come back and say, oh, I didn't mean it that way, well, you said it.
As soon as you apologize, you're done.
Right. Why are you saying it if you didn't mean it? Like, you need to act in a way that's authentic to you and your morals and your values at all times.
Yeah. That's when the crazy comes out of people on the left and the right, when they're their authentic selves. Yeah. Don't try to mask it. I did want to make sure that we got in. So you have six books?
Six books.
Okay. And where can people find all of your stuff and read all about you and learn about ChatGPT and et cetera?
Yes. I have all my books are on Amazon. So my newest one is Make Millions Using ChatGPT. I would love if you check it out. It's a quick read and it's super interesting content, I think. And then any other books, I have one on cybercrime, that's also on Amazon. And then I have some on really random topics because I just like to learn stuff and write stuff.
That's exactly how I am as well. Well, it's been an immense pleasure. And I know we have so much more to talk about, so many rabbit holes to go on, but I'd love to have you on at some point in the future so we can continue the conversation. And then potentially at that time, ChatGPT-4 is out. And of course, I'm sure you'll be writing another book about that as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah. This was very interesting and I really enjoyed it.